listening to God's word, daily prayers, frequent and faithful reception of the Eucharist, confession of sins and absolution, good works. Learn more about the life of Lutheran piety in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. It's written by regular guest Pastor Will Whedon. Browse before you buy at IssuesETC.org or call 1-800-325-3040. Thank, praise, serve, and obey.
I paid for the murder before they determined the sex. Choosing our life over your life meant your death. And you never got a chance to even open your eyes. Sometimes I wonder as a fetus if you fought for your life, would you have been a little genius in love with math? Would you have played in your school clothes and made me mad? Would you have been a little rapper like your Papa the Piper? Would you have made me quit smoking by finding one of my lighters? I wonder about your skin tone, the shape of your nose, and the way you would have laughed and talked fast or slow. Think about it every year, so I picked up a pen. Happy birthday, love you whoever you would have been. Happy birthday.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Tuesday afternoon, January the 2nd. We begin a new calendar year. It's appropriate to look back on the pro-life legislation from 2017 and ahead to what could be some of the priorities for federal pro-life legislation in 2018. We'll do so for the next few minutes of Issues Etc. with Carol Tobias. Carol is a regular guest and president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. Carol, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Happy New Year.
To you as well. Let's do a little recap of 2017. How would you describe how things went legislatively for the pro-life cause?
Well, things went very well in the House of Representatives. We were able to pass major pieces of legislation, like No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act, which would cut across every program, federal program, government-wide. Passed the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, so that babies who have developed to the point where they can feel pain could not be aborted. They nullified an Obama administration rule so that states could decide for themselves whether or not to defund Planned Parenthood. There were a lot of good things that happened there. Unfortunately, the Senate wasn't able to get those passed, so we haven't gotten that into law and gotten that to President Trump's desk yet, but we are hopeful that some of this will come up to the Senate this year and we will be able to follow through.
What is the biggest priority as far as you're concerned in terms of federal legislation for the coming year?
There are a couple of, I think, very critical pieces. One is the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. That is actually going to be voted on in the House of Representatives. At least we certainly expect it to be, on January 19th, which is the day of the annual March for Life that will be taking place in Washington, D.C. Back in around 2001, Congress passed a bill. It was the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, which said babies who survive an abortion should be treated as persons and, you know, be taken care of, except that we have seen since, and President George W. Bush signed that into law. But we saw since then, like the Kermit Gosnells, where, you know, he was convicted of at least, you know, a couple babies where he delivered them alive in the course of the abortion and then snipped them in the back of the head, back of the neck, so that their lives were ended. We saw in the videos that the Center for Medical Progress put out at least questions being raised about whether Planned Parenthood officials were delivering babies alive and then harvesting organs from those live babies. So the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act would say that if a baby survives an abortion, you have to do everything you would for a baby who is, you know, a spontaneous early birth, even if the mother, you know, wanted the child. So if a woman is pregnant and goes into an early delivery and the baby is born alive, of course you're going to use an ambulance, take her to the doctor, do whatever you can to help that baby. If the same thing happens during an abortion, there will then be some federal penalties. The federal murder statute could come into play if they are not taking care of that baby, and it would apply to everybody that is in that room, trying to put teeth into that to protect the babies who do survive abortion. Of course, we're looking for a vote in the Senate on the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, and we're going to be watching for anything that would deal with Obamacare and allowing federal funding of abortion plans that cover abortion. So there's a lot happening out there that we are looking forward to seeing some good things.
So why is it that the Senate is kind of a bottleneck here, or appears to be a bottleneck for a lot of this legislation?
In the Senate, because of their rules, you need 60 votes to pass some legislation. If you have 41 senators who are going to filibuster, then the bill doesn't get to come to the floor for a vote. So we do not have 60 votes in the Senate, pro-life votes, to, you know, pass this kind of legislation. In the past, last year, we had, there were certainly some votes where it was an even 50-50 split because some Republicans would vote with Democrats on a couple of things, but then Vice President Mike Pence was there to break a tie. Because of the special election for the Senate in Alabama, Democrats picked up one more seat, so it's going to be very difficult to get anything through if the legislation allows for a majority vote. Most of it requires 60 to prevent a filibuster.
Why is it that abortion is of particular interest there? Because the Senate somehow manages to pass other legislation without the threat of filibusters. They can do it with ordinary, simple majorities. It was not designed to be a two-thirds majority legislative body. Why is abortion always the place where we see that specter rising?
It's quite frankly because the abortion industry controls the Democratic Party. And the Democratic senators, even those who were elected saying that they were pro-life or would support some pro-life measures, will not do it because they just either aren't going to face their allies, you know, getting them upset, getting the allies upset with the senators, or they just have decided it's not worth the battle. They would rather support Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry than protect babies. So you've got, right now, a 49-member Senate that is going to vote against anything pro-life.
You've mentioned several times, Carol, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. Talk about kind of the reasonable nature of this. This is something that even if someone says, well, I want to support abortion in principle, this is the kind of legislation that is even reasonable, even people on that side should be reasonable about. Why is that?
They should. I mean, the United States is one of seven countries that allows abortion in the later months of pregnancy. We are one of seven. That is appalling, and we shouldn't be anywhere near that. But we're talking about babies who have developed to the point of feeling pain. This is, you know, at least 20 weeks after conception. So these are babies who are, of course, fully formed. They've got their organs functioning. Their brain is functioning. Many of them could survive. Many of them have survived by being, you know, born at that stage or even, you know, a little bit earlier. We do know that public opinion supports this legislation. People who support abortion are squeamish about abortions on late-term babies. So this should be a piece of cake. But again, you've got the abortion industry saying there will be no limits on abortion, period. And the people that they have elected, especially the Democrats, in Congress or in state legislatures are not willing to go against that. Because if there is any limit, if we say babies who can feel pain shouldn't be aborted, then they have to come back and say, well, why not? Okay, what other babies should we not abort? And they don't want that kind of foot in the door. So they just have an absolute strict limit that there will be no restrictions on abortion whatsoever during any time of the pregnancy.
At the state level, we saw Ohio making an attempt to ban abortions that were selected on the basis of abnormalities, I think in particular Down syndrome. Tell us about that, Carol.
We've seen a couple of states working on this now. We know that unborn babies who have been diagnosed with Down syndrome are highly vulnerable to abortion because the medical industry is telling the parents, look, you can just take care of this. You don't have to worry about it. You know, get the abortion and you won't have to raise this baby. And we've seen some countries, you know, Iceland in particular, saying we have eradicated Down syndrome. Well, they haven't eradicated Down syndrome. They have eradicated babies with Down syndrome. So some of the legislation coming up in the states is trying to say, look, these babies, even with Down syndrome, are certainly human beings that, you know, deserve our love and our protection and our assistance. So they are trying to make a point that human beings are human beings and they are special, they are unique, and you don't destroy them because they might be a little different from someone else.
Is there any possibility of that kind of legislation being entertained at the federal level?
It has been discussed. I don't think anything has been introduced yet, but that is certainly one that I would say is on the table, that between pro-life groups who are supporting legislation, working with members of Congress, both in the House and the Senate, various ideas kind of get passed around, passed back and forth, and this is certainly one that, like I said, has been on the table.
I think you mentioned this, but go into a little more detail on the Unborn Child Protection from Dismemberment Abortion Act.
There is a horrific procedure that kills the baby during the abortion process by ripping the arms and the legs off of the body. The head is then crushed and the torso removed. Babies die by bleeding to death. They are being dismembered in the womb. So we are saying you can't do that. You cannot kill a baby by tearing off her arms and her legs in the process. Now, the abortion industry doesn't like this because it's a very common type of method in the second and even into the third trimester. But, again, one, we don't want babies to die in this gruesome manner. And, two, we are using it to educate the public that this is actually happening to our babies in this country. They are being dismembered in the womb, and we need to stop it. And we want more people to be horrified at what is happening in the country and join us in this battle to protect the babies.
Carol Tobias is our guest. She'll be with us for a few minutes on the other side of the break. We're talking about federal pro-life legislation in 2018. We'll talk a little bit about health care reform and what it holds for pro-life legislation right after this.
To get a taste of love, you can call it what you like.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in word, baptism, and supper every Sunday morning at 9:15, Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical, Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan, epiphanydoor.org, 616-681-0791.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Did you know that you can listen to our 24/7 talk and music stations using Amazon Echo? All you have to do is say, Alexa, play Lutheran Public Radio.
Lutheran Public Radio.
Or, Alexa, play Lutheran Talk Radio.
Lutheran Talk Radio.
Own thing, you know, there's this recognition that unrighteous mammon...
Lutheran music, Lutheran talk, anytime, day or night, on Amazon Echo.
Oh, unborn child, if you only knew just what your mama was planning to do.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about federal pro-life legislation in 2018. Carol Tobias is our guest, president of National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. You'd mentioned earlier in our conversation, Carol, health care reform. That obviously is a work in progress. What kind of opportunities do you see there for some pro-life progress?
That is going to be difficult. We thought we were going to be able to change it this year under a process known as budget reconciliation, which only requires a majority vote in the Senate instead of the filibuster-proof 60 votes, but with the change in the Alabama Senate, we lose that one senator. I don't know what we are going to be able to do. We're going to be looking for every opportunity we can to change Obamacare so that federal funding is not used to fund plans. And we are getting a lot of help from the Trump administration and the Department of Health and Human Services in putting into effect where they can make a difference, regulations, executive orders to try to influence the Obamacare program overall, but that one will be actually very, very tough to do in the Senate. I did, though, give them short shrift. I mentioned that we had passed some things in the House, but not in the Senate. The ability to let states deny funding to Planned Parenthood was actually passed in the House and the Senate, so that they did do that. And also, what we have seen in the Senate coming through on the judicial nomination process has been absolutely amazing. More judges to the federal appellate courts, the Court of Appeals, were confirmed under this Senate and this president than in any previous, in the first year, than in any other president's previous history. The Senate has taken very seriously their role to fill the judges on the federal bench, those vacancies, with judges who understand the Constitution and who understand, the need to protect innocent human life. And that's something that we are going to see having an effect and impact on this country for possibly 20, 30, 40 years. Because once a judge is appointed, they can be on there, forever. So that right there is where the Senate has been absolutely amazing, and we are going to see changes because of their actions.
What did we learn, in addition to the horrific things that had already been learned in the previous year, what did we learn last year in 2017 about Planned Parenthood and what they've been up to?
Planned Parenthood has just gone full speed ahead. They are supporting abortion and pushing abortion, no limits. They are trying to get women to come out and brag about their abortions, trying to destigmatize the whole process to make women feel like this is just, the same thing as going to your dentist or your podiatrist or whatever. It's nothing to be ashamed of. So brag about it, talk about it. They really are trying to change the culture and the way the people think about abortion. I mean, abortion has been around here now for 50 years. The first state was Colorado back in 1967 to legalize abortion and allow more than just life of the mother cases. So for 50 years, this country has faced abortion, and they're still not comfortable with it, still don't like it, still think there should be a lot more limits on it, than there are. So Planned Parenthood has an uphill battle, but they've got money, they've got Democrats in Congress, and they are going to keep pushing. So it's going to be up to us to push right back.
How do we square this push? And it is constant. Their PR machine is constantly pushing new ways to, as you say, desensitize people to the idea of abortion, to encourage it as a positive good, with the repeated claim that abortion is only 3% of their business. They seem to spend a lot of time talking about it.
That's true. Well, abortion is their money maker. They make more money off of this procedure than anything else. Now, they get a lot of money from grants. They get a lot of money from the federal government, almost $500 million, for other procedures. They are not reimbursed for performing abortions. But this is a huge moneymaker for them. And for whatever reason, they have decided that unborn child, you know, must be killed at all cost. And they push it.
You mentioned before the break that a lot of the utility of the legislation we've been talking about, even if the legislation proves ultimately to be unsuccessful, it still does have the ability to educate the public. Talk more about that, if you would.
It does. When you talk about unborn babies feeling pain, unborn babies having brains, having hearts, having organs, when you talk about babies who survive abortion and they're born alive and whether or not they should be taken care of, all of that keeps reminding people that we're talking about human beings. These are little babies, little people. Another piece of legislation that I think is so great, and it's popping up in several state legislatures, is dealing with abortion pill reversal. If a woman starts the chemical abortion process and she takes that first pill, which is going to dry up the progesterone in her uterus and basically starve the embryo or the you know baby to death, if she catches it within the first day or two and decides, I made a mistake, I changed my mind, I wish I could go back, they actually can, because some doctors have come up with an abortion pill reversal treatment where she just gets a heavy dosage of progesterone. And we now know that there are more than 400 little kids running around this country because their moms changed their mind after they had taken that first abortion pill. So some of the state legislatures are now saying, okay, now before a woman gets an abortion, she has to be told consequences, side effects, you know, alternatives to abortion. We're going to make sure that she also knows that if she starts that chemical abortion process, she has a short window of opportunity to change her mind and reverse that process. So that's something that I think is great to get out there so that any woman who does find herself in that situation can, you know, go to the internet and just find the information on what she could do to, you know, stop the process, that she changed her mind. So all of this kind of adds into just education and getting people aware of what's happening and letting them know that, you know, options are available, the pregnancy centers are there to give the care to a woman who finds herself in a tough situation. Everything we can do to keep this alive and in the public view, the public eye, is just going to help.
I wanted to ask you about something that came up with another guest a couple months ago in a conversation, and that is on reporting with respect to abortion. The abortion pill brought it to mind because a lot of that remains unreported. Those abortions, the reporting on is very poor, and then there are states that are not great at reporting their numbers. So what we see in terms of abortion rates always has kind of an asterisk next to it, even though we have seen those rates falling. Should there be legislation that would require more stringent reporting on the part of those who are administering abortions, either through those pills in the case of writing prescriptions or surgical abortions?
The Centers for Disease Control doesn't work very hard to get the information. If the states voluntarily send them abortion statistics, they will compile a report and issue that annually. The Center for the Guttmacher Institute, which used to be the arm of Planned Parenthood research arm, does actually a pretty good job of getting information from individual abortion providers, whether it be an abortionist in a clinic or doctors in their offices or hospitals, that because the Guttmacher Institute is considered credible within the abortion community, the abortionists are willing to provide that information. So their numbers are always higher than the CDC and probably much more closely to accurate. You know, not saying that everything is reported, but their numbers on the chemical abortion have been increasing from in the teens to the 20s to the 30s now to where it's almost 40% of abortions are the chemical abortion. And the abortionists themselves, if they are prescribing this, are generally, you know, reporting to Guttmacher, which is why I think we need to make sure that, you know, as the chemical pill is used more and more, women have to know that if they change their mind and act quickly enough, they can still save their baby.
Should there also be some kind of legislation to require a far more stringent set of specifications in who has access to those kinds of pills?
I think that would be great. part of the problem is when you start getting into some things like that, you know, legislators get a little squeamish just because, you know, of all the regulations. I know there are some pro-life legislators who will think, oh, another one, another one, another one, and they're going to vote right, but, you know, they would like to get on to something else. I know a lot of pro-life people are frustrated because they wonder why we have to deal with all these, the pain bill and the born alive bill, and, you know, why not just pass something that says all abortion is going to be illegal? There's a process, which means we have to elect men and women who will vote for those bills, and we have to either elect judges or have the right people appointing judges who will uphold that pro-life legislation. So it's a multi-purpose, multi-faceted process. And if we want to stop all abortions, if we want to do the, you know, the regulations, the reporting for any that are done, we just need to make sure that we are electing more men and women who will vote for these bills, because that's what it ultimately comes down to.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to National Right to Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Carol, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
When we come back, staying on the subject of abortion, we're going to talk about a case of a Netflix TV episode that featured emergency contraception and abortion. Holly Shear will join us. She's written recently for The Federalist, Black Mirror is Right, Emergency Contraception Can Cause Abortion. Stay tuned.
Each month, the Lutheran Witness magazine brings together leading thinkers and writers to cover a range of vital topics relating to Christian life and faith, culture and theology. So whether your 2018 New Year's resolution is to read more widely, think more broadly, or grow more deeply in your faith, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's flagship magazine can help. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's what you'll find in the latest Issues Etc. journal. I've written a column titled A Letter to Ex-Evangelicals. Pastor Rob Kieslowski has detailed his journey to the Lutheran Christian tradition, and Dr. Ken Sherb writes about the story of an entire city's journey to the Reformation, Strasbourg, France. We'll send you the Issues Etc. journal for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
Listen to the best of the church's Christmas music during the entire Christmas season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. During the 12 days of Christmas, Lutheran Public Radio, LutheranPublicRadio.org.